Miss McIntosh, my darling, chapter 73, part 3, last part. So many, perhaps it was only natural that the featherweight champion should now seem a dream, one who had put his mark upon her, as he said, the mark of his clenched fist before it weakened. She could see, she could feel it all as in a sad, mad dream, from which she could not awaken. How it had happened, her crying, her silence, her threats, that the pale leaves had fallen from the trees, so great had been the reverberation of that great hidden love, that she was confined as the slow stars wheeled like white birds toward dawn's revealing light, but there was then instantly a feeble birth cry as of a memory, sharp and clear, the prick of an icicle, the silence of the unmarked grave, no footprint, no fingernail, one event following upon the other in rapid succession, as moment follows moment. The old mule looking on when she was alone, that there was the milky sky of morning, that there were her empty hands. How it had happened, and was always happening, the conception, the confinement, the birth cry in a single night. Yet she was always pregnant, carrying this heavy weight under her heart. A little shadow boxer, he who might suddenly strike her, he whose little shadow foot she saw upon the grass. Who was the father of this? She could not say. She had never asked the father for anything. For nothing, not even his love, she had never reproached the father, whoever he was, or only once or twice. She had not asked the dying featherweight to support her, or to give a coin to the child, to think of the women who had forgotten him, the mothers of his children, how selfish they had been when he was a champion featherweight and had forgotten them, how they had pursued him, the unfaithful, and had demanded child support, had threatened injunctions and persecutions and exposure, yet how, when he was dying, they had not come. But of all the children he had fathered, he had wanted only the child by Esther Longtree. That and no other when he was dying, it seemed. That part of it had really wrung her heart, when she thought of her own unselfishness. Had she ever pursued the sterile fathers, dry as burned grass, to demand support for their children, the stillborn so many? Never, almost never. But it was because she was unselfish and unrealized that Joe Goldberg, the champion featherweight, down on his knees, snapping at houseflies, had turned his mind toward her, so good, so true when others failed, to her who was his victory, to her who was cross-eyed, knock-kneed, thick-skinned, awkward, sad, happy, reeling, staggering, fighting with flies, with shadows, always, always pregnant and promising more. Why he could not put her out of his mind when he was bleeding the snowy mountains, why he came back to all, even if it had not happened, the hillside graveyard, the low hills, the crumbling angels, the old mule, the broken fence, the white woman, the leaves stripped from the trees by the immense echoes, everything stripped bare of all illusion. And she had been the peak above the clouds, above God, above the graves. Where was his little child, big or little, and had he ever asked for him? Then there had been no other letters, but all this while, ever since, something growing under her heavy heart. What happened then to the old featherweight? She could not tell, for she did not know. There was always this uncertainty. She had not been able to read his last letter through, so she could not tell whether God or Joe or the flies had won that battle. Never did find out how it all ended or what became of whom, she being so busy. The strongest men were the weakest. Even the unrealized memory, however, must live in her dream, must live in her just like the stillborn, like all whom she had hidden everywhere in streams and fields and under the snowdrifts. The stillborn clapped their hands when she came by, shouted in her ear like torments. It was why the undertaker complained to Esther Longtree. The undertaker always did complain that she had not brought him any business, that she was putting the graveyard out of business, hiding hers in streams and pools. The evidence, something which would be found, she feared, by the squirrel hunters in the woods. She might even have to face a jury soon for murder, an old, almost forgotten murder, a shadow, a gleaming under the frozen cranberry marsh, something under the green kints. But the little shadow boxer lay under her heart, like a protection so long as he was not hers. Oh God, her heart leaking big drops, what an everlasting pregnant woman might yet have to go through. Besides her everlasting pregnancy, arrest, imprisonment, a trial for murder, murder, murder of the helpless stillborn. How many, with all the evidence imaginable, produced to condemn her in men's eyes, all that she could imagine, a fingernail, a golden hair, a foot, an empty bird's nest. There might be a trial for murder, for the old Chicago detective was trying to find the proof that she had killed his three whom she had never born, or who were born without eyes. Others might also testify against her if they had the chance to do so. Some might say that they had seen the flowering horse chestnut, the bloody flower, its reflection in a dark stream. She was innocent in her own mind, yet she did not wish to appear before the jury while she was in another family way, palpable, distended, enlarged, her forehead throbbing with the birth of thought. For if she was disturbed by inquiries of the Chicago detective, another old, sterile father, who knew but that she would be delivered to the little shadow boxer, the featherweight's lost progeny, right there in the courtroom with searchlights turned upon her, blinding her bright eyes, and besides, by his birth, immediate or slow, the breaking of the birth waters, the feathered feet emerging, the golden head, the folded hands, what could be proved as to her innocence? What if he too was born dead? What if even he accused her, pointed the accusing finger, so that she had killed the others? So long as he was not born in public, she could not die entirely, even although a part of her had died at every birth. He was so feathery, yes, but a heavyweight, whoever the father might have been, or if there was no father but the sky, the wind, the lack of the conclusion was not her business, it was not even the detective's business, for she had never killed his three. There was no limit to human capacity, old doctor had always told her, reeling drunkenly in her presence, praising her that she was his immortal case and different from other women, for she had had so many. If she was his immortal case, should she be brought to trial for being immortal, the murdered, the murderer? She did hope not, biting at her thumb, her eyes bright with fear and love. No trial could be grand enough, but it would cause, even though not grand, a vaster excitement than the floods bearing the islands. It would be as quiet as the falling of the snow, as quiet as dead robin redbreast under a 10-foot snowdrift. If she was brought to face the jury, it would be quiet and awful, she guessed, a loud noise. It would even have its funny aspects, which, under some other circumstances, she might enjoy, decking herself with flowers and feathers in her hair, wearing a tight green dress that would split at the seams, painting two mouths, rouging her earlobes. All the thin-breasted old maids whom she had ever made fun of, because she was different from them, because she was popular and pregnant and sought after, would flock to the county seat so that they could discover and lay bare the old maid in her heart, the withered rosebud. Or that was what they would suppose they would discover, though she might suddenly show them far otherwise, that they were wrong. She might veer, she might turn, she might give birth. All the jealous married women would come to see her laid bare because she had seduced their husbands in the haystacks and flooded meadows, and they would see that they were wrong. She was undecided which it would be, a birth cry or a silence, sorrow or joy. She had not made up her mind how she would act or what she would say. Who else had been so popular, so lonely, a disappointed mother? Why were the sterile fathers never blamed? She might get mad. She might make faces at the jury and at her mother. From her point of view, anyhow, it was nobody's business or recollection but hers, whether she had had her children stillborn or alive, and then had killed them, or had never had them, or how long she had been pregnant, inasmuch as she was the only one who had endured the immeasurable sorrow and happiness, the only one bruised forever by a small, clenched fist of something that was still, very still. Even she, thinking back, got discouraged, felt at times ready to face the jury, for something might happen then to end it all. The baby might drop from her as a peach drops from a bough. Yet again it might happen that she would not give birth, and that would be more difficult to bear. Nothing, nothing but light and wind and darkness. She knew, for it had happened before. She might have the experience of her labor pains just when she was giving no birth at all. She knew, for she had already experienced this. Suddenly, with puzzled, smiling head reared back, with tears raining down her gray cheeks as if there were a stormy sky above her, with legs astraddle, she might endure the birth of nothing. The birth water suddenly breaking, it might begin again, the great cranium moving, its arms folded over its face to shield its face from light, yet there be no birth but the beginning. And she as thin as thin. What labor pain this would be for her. To be flattened out in front of people without having anything to explain her flatness would be so hard. To go through the pains of labor, the shocks, the blows, and though the little shadow foot moved against her womb as on a grassy slope, and though the headwinds moved the golden head that was still coming and had no anchor, and to have no proof of this in the dusty courtroom, no proof that she was even pregnant. She had heard the birth cry before when there had been no birth, had heard the everlasting silence when someone was born. She realized how it might be, perhaps not even a feather, a cobweb. She had heard her own cries, but who else had heard them or had even cared? The fathers, the stars, the barren places, if there were barren places? who had cared for her when she was anguished, heaving, giving birth to nothing, not even a little foot, deformed or perfect, no evidence, no shadow in the wind. No wonder if she could not answer the dying father's. It was so sad and unconcluded and happy, her life. All the births, but maybe one, had been so painless, but that was probably the birth she remembered best, when there was such great pain, when she had staggered under a shower of heavy blows, when she had fallen, tearing at grass roots, clawing at air, rolling, screaming, screaming for help, and nothing was born. So hard, nothing was, harder than something. Her brain had screamed in its ivory box, begging for her own forgiveness, and there was nothing born. No child in that windy night that was still mourning, nothing to show for this birth of nothing but the perennial tears, the broken bones, the enlarged birth ring, a stain of blood, the dew upon the rocks, the clear sky, nothing, a broken fence. No crying but hers in the still morning when she had looked around her to see if there was at least a dead sparrow, cold as the sky. The birth of nothing was the hardest birth to bear. Where was old doctor then? There she had lain all night in the long undulating grass with her glossy breasts erected, her legs stretched wide to make a marble door of exit, her body gleaming like marble from head to foot. She could remember like a fallen marble statue in the place of the angelic birth, that it was not where she usually was, but under the dwarfish apple tree that never yielded an apple in its life. And that she had seen the great cranium moving as well as the distant lights of an automobile, and that she had been afraid. The old mule, white in the white night, had stood with its head hanging over the rail fence and white flowers in its mouth. The old mule had looked so mournful, so funeral, so snowy in the heat, her only companion during the pain of great labor when she was worn out with the pain of giving birth. The undulation of childbirth had torn her apart, body and soul. But fortunately, in her ignorance then, she had not dreamed that there would be no child. She enrolled, heaved, called for help as her body was torn apart, the ossified bones giving, the stretched flesh stretching, and it had all seemed worthwhile, for she had seen the movement, the great cranium moving like the dead moon in the sky. It had moved through a long, dark, dusty, narrow channel without any birth waters or winds or help. It had moved all night long, tearing her. The dry labor, dry as dust, had taken many hours, but toward dawn there was no pain in her bones, only a numbness in her senses. And yet, though the baby had been coming for so long, the baby had never come. It was still coming, however, she could see, as if there were a mole's ridge. She had been, therefore, almost peaceful, staring, watching the slow, still motion of coming, beautiful to her dulled, blackened eyes. For this baby's birth, she had figured then and ever afterward, should be the death of conscience and grief. But yet, it had not been the death of conscience as she had figured. For quite suddenly, even then, her conscience had started gnawing on her, tearing her apart, giving her new pangs, and she was filled with grief which seemed to have no end. How foolish she had been to count on this birth's conclusion even when she had seen it coming, the great cranium moving like the dead moon across the clouded vaulted sky. Nothing had come. Who had deceived her, night after night? Whom had she deceived? She had been so sure, not doubting her expectations or promises. She had lain in the correct position, rotating with earth, wounded by labor pains, her great white body heaving, the numb, her ears deafened by her own cries. Fireflies had swarmed around her, lighting the darkness. At dawn, they had dimmed their lights. She had lain still and tired in the long white grass, numb, dulled, painless, anesthetized by the heavens, her head slightly raised, her legs stretched wide apart to make a door of exit where had been no entrance, her breasts erected in the shape of horns, and had watched with distended eyes the swelling motion as of hills, and the depression as of valleys, and the great cranium moving as slowly as a mourner. Yet nothing had come in the darkness or in the light. Nothing, for she wouldn't have seen it, watching like that, her eyes not even crossed. The old mule had watched too, the snow-hooded drooping head with large ears splashing, sad as the ghost of a mule. And what could be sadder than the ghost of one who had no lily-lipped baby to suck at its short stalks, pull at its long ear, no image? It made Esther Longtree nervous. There had been lightning without storm. The heavens lighted brighter than day, yet nothing came. The hot winds moving around her restlessly, her hair had been pasted down her forehead by dew as of heaven's labor, and great white blossoms had fallen silently from the twisted dwarfish apple tree that could get thus far but no farther in mortal creation. And a cow that the farmer had forgotten to milk and load all night long, a white pig had moved in the torn, ragged grass. All had been clear, so she could not have been confused. Fireflies, stars, lightning had made all clear in that lost world, or so it had seemed to her then, that the lost world was clear and her familiar place. She had been courageous, sleepless, patient, staring ever where the grass parted in the wind, for fear that something of hers might be lost. No wink had she slept for fear that, while she was selfishly sleeping, the baby might escape from her, for so many others had. She had kept close watch so that if it came suddenly, earlier than expected, or later, it would not get lost in the white grass and wander away like some of the happy stillborn. She had planned to look for it at dawn if it had gone from her during the night. At dawn, however, there was nothing. Not even the umbilical cord drifting, nothing that was hers. There was nothing in the dawn, no little hand, no little foot that was hers, she knew, for she had looked everywhere, calling. And what was very strange, though she had not moved from her place during the night, she was not where she had been at all, for her place had moved from her. The world had moved away. A fence had changed to the side of a hill, and no dwarf apple tree could then be seen in miles of emptiness, and a hill had flattened out, and a cold, sharp wind blew over the flat, barren land that was spotted by rocks and scabby snow. There was scabby snow on all the rocks. How had time passed? It had been summer when she was taken by her labor pains, and only one night had passed. But it was winter when the morning came so clear. Everything had changed and moved but she, and even she was many shades thinner. Her stomach flattened out where the reeds clanked like voices in the winter wind. There was proof, however, that she had not been wrong, that she had suffered the labor of childbirth, for the snow was spotted with blood, and her bloody skirt was laid upon the barren ground, and her bloody clothes were hanging from the leafless trees. It looked as if there had been a great battle, her body black and blue and covered with bruises, her eyes, her lips cut and bleeding, her hair torn out, her head roaring. She was thin, emaciated, sick, and nothing had been born, and yet she had seen it coming. Only during that long night the branch of life had withered, just as once it had blossomed, and she could not find it, and there was no child anywhere, no child under the snow, no child in her womb, nothing. How she had watched. Where had it gone? It could not have wandered away with the others, or else she would have seen it and have drawn it back against her breast even if it was dead. How hard then to face nothing, her bloodstained clothes hanging loose upon her, her breast dry, her womb shrunken, her head hanging. She had walked against the sky, sorry she had ever been born, and must face her parents with an explanation of her thinness. This was no birth to speak of, and this was the greatest pain of any she had suffered, the birth of nothing. It was almost the only pain. It was the pain of emptiness, her skin hanging in folds, her bones showing, the pain of not being. Poor Esther Longtree, grown immense again now, smiling with the wraith of a smile, trying to remember this, the way she had not given birth when she had gone through the birth labors and was reduced to fleshy size, and was ashamed to go home to her parents for fear that they might notice her thinness and ask questions. It had been hard. It had been worse than when she was fired from her last job. It had been worse than almost anything, for she had feared so greatly the social humiliation, the kind she could not bear at last. Poor Featherweight, poor lost champion. Maybe it was this child that she had given birth to when nothing was born, when she had struggled fiercely, when she had fought for her life, when she had lain back exhausted. For she did remember now that there had been something else as she had staggered across the barren, snow-spotted ground above the frozen river, her eyes still blackened, her lips bleeding as at a high altitude. Something else. And it was not the tinkle of sheep bells or the grinding of a wheel upon the icy road that climbed the graveyard hill. She did remember, yes, that as she had staggered, reeling, bleeding, striking at the empty air, ready to faint, leaning across a broken fence, a white feather had drifted down from the dark, cold, glassy sky, a white feather of some far-flying Arctic bird, and that she had thought nothing of it. For things were always falling from the sky and falling on Esther Longtree, too. Now, though, looking back, she felt that this white feather might have been intended as a message from the silence to her, that she should keep on having hope. Perhaps she was wrong, however. Perhaps it was just another coincidence. It had happened so long ago, so many months ago. This great loss of blood, this pain of labor, this giving birth to nothing had happened, she could swear, before she had ever so much as met the Featherweight, if she had met him. So it could not have been his feather lost from his crown. It could not have been his feather, for it had come too early. So it must have been that of some old snowy bird in the silence. But it was not her business whose feather it was, or to let her mind wander like this, for ever since she had been pregnant, and had been expecting this little shadow boxer. It had been nothing then, a mistake, But there had been other stillbirths like Snowflake since, children of the dying fathers, and they were her own hoarse, uneven cries awakening her at night when she had to get up to nurse the greedy little mouth. Yes, to nurse and still it. But so what? So what did that prove? She had nursed her right fist, too, when it was aching.